Welcome to the 25th episode of The Lucid Truth with Lynn Ulbrich. Lynn is the mother of Ross Ulbrich, otherwise known as Dread Pirate Roberts, who is serving over 100 years in prison for making the popular Bitcoin-based darknet market the Silk Road. Lynn is a libertarian activist working to free her nonviolent and peaceful son from a life of wrongful imprisonment. A goal I hope she achieves sooner than later. I'll let her give you the rest of the details. Please welcome Lynn Ulbrich. Lynn, great to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, good to be here.
Yeah, this is very exciting. We have a fun episode planned for everyone. So we're going to wait for some people to join. But in the meantime, I wanted to ask you, I saw yesterday that the Libertarian Party had made a letter to the president that was basically asking for him to free your son, Ross. So can you tell us a little bit about what that letter said and what it was?
Yeah, and it's actually that letter was the two candidates, Spike Cohen, the vice presidential candidate, and Jen Jorgensen, the presidential candidate. That is specifically from them. We also Nick Sarwark, who's the chair of the party, and Dan Fishman, who's the executive director, also wrote their own letter. And then I believe it was in 2018, the Libertarian Party passed a motion unanimously, which I never knew libertarians did anything unanimously, right? Asking the president to issue clemency for Ross, a commutation. And in various ways, the Libertarian Party has stood by one of their own, because Ross is truly one of their own, and, are doing their best to get the attention of the president, because he is the person who can sign a piece of paper and have Ross walk out of that cage.
Yeah, it's quite the platform too. It's a whole party standing behind this mission. So I'm sure that's a very exciting development.
We also have 46, I forgot, 46 state chairs of the Libertarian Party from across the country also signed a group letter, as well as other libertarian individually. But yeah, so 46 out of, I guess there's 51 counting DC, signed a group letter to the same thing addressed to the president.
Wow. And there's already been, in terms of the official petition, there's been over almost 300,000 signatures?
Oh no, it's like over 320,000 now.
Wow. That is so awesome. So we're off to a good start here. So, okay. In terms of anyone who doesn't know, luckily things are going well. Can you tell us a little bit about the history here? Who is Ross and why is it something that's being talked about today?
Well, Ross is my son. Mm-hmm. And when he was a young libertarian in his mid-20s, he got involved with the Ron Paul campaign. He brought Ron Paul to Penn State. And was very involved with his campaign, and became more and more on fire for freedom. You know, he started reading Austrian economics and all of, you know, those writers, and really became, you know, very passionate about this, and felt that people really needed to experience what a true free market was, what true privacy was, and he wanted them to have that actual experience. He created a video game to do that and did talk to people about publishing it, but it didn't work out. So he created a platform called Silk Road that was based on the non-aggression principle, according to libertarian philosophy, all voluntary interaction, and nothing that harmed a third party was permitted. For example, anything that created a victim or used force. So there was no, for example, any child exploitation of any kind, because a child would be harmed, or stolen property. Well, you know, the person who was stolen from would be harmed, or, you know, and actually I had a top level admin tell me that he used to spend hours and hours every day purging the site of anything like that. Cause it was all about voluntary interaction, and, you know, drugs were considered a voluntary choice. It was mostly the most commonly exchanged drug on there was user amounts of cannabis, but there were other drugs. And I'm certainly not an advocate of that, but I think it was, you know, the intentions were good. Maybe, you know, there's an argument for, yeah, it wasn't smart, or it was a bit reckless or whatever, but Ross's intentions were good. He is a very peaceful person. He's a very compassionate and philanthropic person. And he thought he was doing the right thing. And in many ways, I understand, you know, that philosophy. And actually, it was the philosophy that was part of his horrendous double life plus 40-year sentence without parole. The judge said at sentencing, it is to be noted that you started the site for philosophical reasons. She knows very well that's why he started it, not to be a drug kingpin. Ross could care less about. He's not a drug person, and he's not a certainly not a kingpin. Not too many right. kingpins have voluntary interaction, non-aggression principle. But she said, I just don't know if it's a philosophy you've left behind. And so I essentially implying that, well, since you seem to still stick by this dangerous philosophy of voluntary interaction and a free market, I'm going to have to put you in a cage for the rest of your life.
And oh, wow.
Well, I mean, that's what she's saying. That's essentially what she's saying. And she said that. She brought up his philosophy and referenced it in the sentencing. It's in the transcript. We're not supposed to go to jail, or certainly not be condemned to death in prison for our philosophy.
But yeah, that's basically not trying.
She used it to justify what she did.
That makes it worse, actually, because that's not crime. Yeah. You have a certain philosophical perspective that shouldn't be something that adds to a criminal sentence. So.
Absolutely. And it's a First Amendment violation. Think about it. We have free speech that we're supposed to be able to say anything we want. We're not supposed to be sent to prison for it or have it enhance the length of time you're there.
Right, right. Because it'd be one thing if he had gotten 10, 15 years, but it's, you know, there's no possibility of freedom at this level. No. I remember one part of the case where there was no criminal charge, right? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was the smear job that basically the government did on him, saying that he had planned murders and was involved with murder for hire. And we had no idea about this. Ross didn't either. Ross has always denied it. And it came out of bail, and they used it to deprive him of his bail, and it was ambush. We were like, what are you talking about? Right. And then 2 months later, when it came time to indict him and go to trial, it wasn't in there. They just used it and they talked about it at trial. The judge allowed them to speak to the jury about murder for hire based on anonymous chats. There was no witness. It was Ross, but they told the jury it was. And the jury's like, oh, okay. You know, it's like there was no proof. And then there was another indictment in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And that's where two corrupt agents were operating at the core of the investigation and were, stealing a fortune in Bitcoin
right.
on the site. And based on their material, their claim that this is a chat that this guy said that he wants to hire people to, they took that as evidence from these corrupt people who are now in prison.
And they were sentenced, weren't they?
But it was never brought to trial there. It was never prosecuted. And then now it's been dismissed with prejudice. There's nothing at all in Ross's case in the legal system about murder for hire, but of course it keeps coming up, not as much as it used to, but it's like on social media, but he, you know, did this and that, you know, there's so many lies anyway, but it's kind of like in the ether about this case, and it's so opposite to Ross's character. And he even proved how nonviolent he is, because he put his own life at risk in prison when he refused to participate in an assault on another inmate. And by doing that, by refusing, you are now a target. You are a target, whatever prison you go to. And So he was eventually, he had to put himself in protective custody, which was an 8x10 metal box, basically, for 3.5 months, and then was moved to Tucson, where I am also now, and to be near him and visit him. And because that's one of the three prisons in the United States that they have designated for people who are targeted specifically in the system and to be keep them safe. So it ended up being a blessing, because where he was before, it was very violent, very gang heavy, very tough place. It was a maximum, both of them are maximum security prisons, but the one in Colorado is a step down from the supermax. It's very violent. And where he is now, it's people who need to be protected. So there, it's not violent. And that's a huge one.
That's good. Yeah, if you know anything about Ross, you can definitely tell that he's not violent. If you see the stuff he's writing in prison that you've been putting out, if you look into his philosophy, you can tell he's a genuine, honest person that got kind of caught up in this whole thing. And I think they're just trying to make an example out of him. Would you agree with that?
They totally said it. I'll take them at their word.
Oh, they said that.
The prosecution said it. And they said, you are the first to use the internet in this way, and we're going to nail you for it. Basically, I mean, they didn't say those exact words, but basically say, we need to make you an example. The judge said it too. And it's like having the head on the spike of the medieval castle. You know, it's like, this is what's going to happen to you. And, you know, he took the brunt for what I'm sure were many DPRs, many people running the site. And for, you know, when he wasn't even involved for part of it, and, you know, he took the full brunt of it.
It seems like it should be illegal to make an example out of someone in that way. It's not actually fair in the first place. And second off, it didn't work. There were darknet marketplaces that popped up all over after.
Right, especially after the sentence. Right, but no, it's not what our justice system is supposed to be. It's supposed to be each individual is judged on their case, you know, on the facts. And instead, okay, we got this guy, let's make him an example and string him up. I mean, to me, a judge that gives a first-time nonviolent offender a death sentence, essentially a death in prison sentence, is a hanging judge. They've been around forever. They're, you know, there's a term for it, a hanging judge, where it's like, take him to the gallows. This is what happened in our country, in America. And to have any of the prison guards come up to me often and they're like, what is he doing here? You know, he's really a good guy. I mean, you know, you got to get him out of here. I've had them say this to me.
Wow.
You know, it's like he stands out very much, especially in the place that were violent like that. It's like they're used to, you know, look, there's a lot of people who shouldn't be in there. Plain and simple. There's a lot of people who shouldn't be in the prison system. A lot of nonviolent drug offenders and others. But Ross does stand out there, and he was very well liked because he's very likable. And they're kind of like, this isn't right. These are guards. Yeah, these are prison staff. Statement.
Yeah, right. The actual staff saying something who are working there. Maybe right. That makes actually, a compelling case.
A former guard. Wrote a letter on his behalf to the president.
Wow. That's insane. And you're right. There is an overwhelming problem that Ross is a great example of demonstrating, but it is something that permeates throughout the culture because 80% of crimes that are committed and charged in the United States are nonviolent victimless crimes. So it's completely unwarranted that we're the land of the free. We should probably drop that statement.
Well, we're going to lose it if we're not careful.
Yes.
You know, I think we still have more freedom than a lot of many places, but it's very alarming what they're doing now.
Yes, it's very concerning. Mm-hmm. So how do you think, knowing all this about the case, what do you think the best strategies are to help to free your son? Do you think getting the attention of the president is one of the best strategies? Because it seems like that's the one a lot of people are putting effort into.
Yeah, well, there's just two options left. And one of them is considered a Hail Mary in the system. It's everybody does a last ditch effort, which is called a 2255. I think people do win them, but they're very, very hard to win. We have two lawyers working very hard on it now. And you know, frankly, I hope it works, but it's in New York. It's in front of the same Southern District of New York. I have my faith in the courts. Oh, I'm so sorry. Hang on a second.
Fine. Not sure what a 2025 is. Is that an appeal kind of thing?
255. It's a habeas petition. And it's basically bring up things that were wrong with your defense lawyer or new evidence or things where they say this needs to be addressed. He didn't get a proper defense, things like that. And so that's ongoing. I think it's been held up because of, you know, a lot of the courts have been closed. But the other way is for the president to commute a sentence. You know, just say this needs to be corrected. This sets a terrible precedent for other people. It's look, anybody with any reasonable brain power can see that a first-time nonviolent young offender getting double life, plus 40 years without parole, essentially a death in prison sentence for something he did on a computer when he was 26 years old, who's completely peaceful, has no history of violence at all in his personal life before he, you know, got arrested or since. And, you know, there's 100 letters on our website of people who know Ross personally, who begged the judge to give him the minimum. And instead she said, I'm going to give you the maximum I possibly can, which meant to me that she would have given him the death penalty if she could have, but luckily she couldn't.
Yeah. You know,
but hello.
What was
pardon me?
What was the minimum?
He originally, he's practically served it already. The original thing was 10 years mandatory minimum, mm-hmm. but the prosecution said, we're going to recommend life to the judge. And so his lawyer said, oh, no, you shouldn't go into that deal. In retrospect, we think that was a mistake. But in any case, 10 years was originally one of the things on the table, and Ross would have taken it for sure. You know, and then when he didn't take it, on his lawyer's advice, they said, okay, fine, we're going to load on the kingpin charge. Now, the kingpin charge is a joke. It's saying that a website host is like Pablo Escobar or El Chapo. It's an absolute joke. And it's an abuse of the system to even use it. It's like a mockery. And, you know, so they loaded that on. That brought the mandatory minimum to 20 years, plus it had its own life sentence. So now Ross has two life sentences. This is all in the plea deal. They can throw stuff on there. They can. And so that's what they did. And then they added some other stuff. You know, didn't they add murder for hire? Please note. They added fake IDs and hacking, even though there was software on Silk Road that might have been used or could have been used for hacking. They loaded him up with a hacking charge. It was never proven or even claimed that any software from Silk Road hacked into a computer. They've never charged Ross himself with hacking into a computer, but
yeah,
it's
it
because it could have happened with what was on there. Same with money laundering. Not that Ross laundered money, but people traded Bitcoin for fiat or gold or whatever. That's money laundering. And Ross is the one that gets the charge, even though he didn't actually do it.
Yeah.
I forget the other one, fake IDs or something.
It's kind of like suing a mayor for someone breaking a crime within their city. Like, they didn't actually do anything. They were just kind of hosting the whole thing. They didn't actually participate in the crime.
And it's a conspiracy charge. Like, his charges are conspiracy. And what's happened with conspiracy charges is a big problem in our country, because now with conspiracy charges, it widens that criminal umbrella so that you can be in a conspiracy and not have even gone near what happened. You know, it's like the getaway car driver gets charged with the actual murder, even though he didn't know even there was going to be a murder. But even more remote than that, you can be charged with a conspiracy. And then you get just as severe a sentence as the person who pulled the trigger. And this is a problem. And except for the kingpin charge, which is completely bogus, all of Ross's charges are conspiracy. Not that he did any of it, but that he had the platform they claim for even a small time. It didn't have to be the whole time. They didn't actually say he did have it for the whole time. But all it has to be is you had it for, you know, even a day. You know, so that's our conspiracy laws, and they're very bad.
Yeah. So, man, so he had 10 years offered to him that he could have taken, and he didn't.
Well, there was no guarantee that the judge would have agreed to it.
Oh.
They said they were going to recommend. What happens is they offer a deal, and it goes to the judge, and the judge, you know, and because they said they were going to recommend life, there was an argument of, well, maybe we better go to trial and see if we can fight it, because she might go with life. But the thing about that is that normally if you go to trial, you get a much worse consequence than if you plead. So the odds of him getting life out of the gate like that, very, very slim. And I think we were poorly advised there. And I didn't have any say in it, but I was like, well, we're in America. We'll have fairness. We'll have fair trials. Boy, has my eyes been open. And
yeah.
You know, the criminal justice system has been weaponized against people. Absolutely. And is fueling this mass incarceration that is, it's a human rights emergency, and it's a national disgrace what's going on in this country.
And people are starting to realize it. People are starting to cut their toxic ties with the police state. And maybe this is why this is currently the time that this message is going to be the most salient to spread to people. People might be more receptive to transgressions from the justice system on account of the individual, because right now people are starting to recognize that in a large degree of society, especially with that autonomous zone. So I was going to ask this, I guess you kind of answered the question. So how have your views changed since all of this happened with Ross in terms of public policy, politics? Have they, at the court system you mentioned just now, your eyes were open. Was that a big change in terms of how you kind of viewed the world?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been, you know, a freedom person, really. Leave me alone. I wanted to live my life, you know, just as a person and an entrepreneur. And I'm never a big fan of, you know, big government intruding in my life. But I was a patriotic person. I was a conservative patriot. And honestly, I still am, for the principles that I see that our country was founded on, but I believe we're being hijacked. And so I had faith in the system to an extent. And I thought, well, it's, you know, and when our lawyer, for example, said, oh yeah, they were talking about the murder for her, I said, but it wasn't charged. He didn't. And he goes, oh no, they can do that. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, yeah, no, they do that. He's so jaded. He's like, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, wow. And he was right. They do. And apparently they do it commonly. But in any case, after Ross's, what I've seen with Ross, I don't believe our Constitution has very much power anymore. They violated the First Amendment, as we discussed. They violated the Fourth Amendment. And that's a whole other conversation. The Fifth Amendment, which is due process, they hid those corrupt agents from the jury over the objection of our lawyer, so that they had no idea there were two corrupt agents who had unfettered access to the Silk Road site, who were selling things, stealing things, and changing chats. And they had the ability to do that. And I'm sure they did. I think they did. But they had the ability to, which taints it. Chats and all these things that were used as evidence, and the jury never knew they existed.
That sounds super important.
Then there's the
sixth, leave that aside.
Yeah, and then there's the Sixth Amendment, which is about her using murder for hire as a justification. That went all the way to the Supreme Court, as did the Fourth Amendment violations, because we are guaranteed protection from a rogue judge who decides they know better than a jury. They're going to decide you're guilty, even if a jury doesn't even, you're not even charged, and the jury never ruled on it, like in Ross's case. Or if you're acquitted, they can say, oh, well, I don't care if you're acquitted. I believe the prosecutor, and you're guilty. This is we have a Sixth Amendment for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment. It's an absolute violation of the Eighth Amendment. So there's a lot of amendments there in our Bill of Rights that are being violated with Ross's case. And that has been, I've been like, what? What? We have no, so what's our Constitution? What's happening here? You know, that's our bedrock of our freedom. And that's what I thought. And after this, I have to say, I'm very skeptical. I'm skeptical about certainly the criminal justice system. But another thing that's changed for me is I never thought about it that much, to be honest. I never thought about the prison system and the people. And I really didn't. I didn't. And I think a lot of people don't. They're kind of out of sight, out of mind. But in the almost 7 years that I've been going to prisons regularly and getting to know the families and the kids and seeing the suffering that is being imposed on these people, I really don't think a nonviolent offender should be in a cage. I think that we have enough technology now that we can have people be out at home or whatever with an ankle bracelet, whatever. They're not violent. And making restitution if that's appropriate. Children are suffering at home. I had one woman say, you know, before my husband was arrested, they were getting straight A's. Now everything's falling apart. Ross had a friend in Colorado, Tony, who is serving life in Colorado where marijuana is legal for marijuana. For marijuana, he's done 13, I guess now 14 years, and he's sentenced to die in prison for selling a large quantity of marijuana. It's a large quantity, but it's still marijuana. And right. It's Colorado where it is legal on a state level. And actually, they never even found him with any. Apparently, it was all based on informant, which is a whole other thing because informants have every incentive to lie. They're told, say what we want you to say. Or, funny, you won't get the advantages we're promising you and you might really regret it. I mean, these prosecutors who take an oath to pursue justice and truth are running the courtrooms, as far as I can tell, running the whole thing. And I've been told by people who this has happened to them directly. They threaten your family, they threaten you, and they say, if you don't plea and you go to trial, you're going to get a much worse sentence than you would have otherwise. Even if you're innocent, you're going to lose, probably. And they probably are. So, because everything's stacked against them. And so I know someone who told me, he said, I pled to things I didn't do because they were threatening my family and me. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not how America is supposed to be. And so this is, yeah, no, I am kind of like, whoa, this is, I've seen it with my own eyes and talked to people myself. And it's not right.
Yeah, it's really messed up. And I think if the presidency is the most likely way to change the verdict for what is it? It's what does the president sign for?
Oh, what we're asking for is a commutation, which means it's not about pardoning Ross and saying he did nothing wrong. It's not expunging his record. He would still be a felon. He would still, you know, which whatever. I mean, you know, it's not great, but you know, and I just want him out of the cage, right? So what we're asking for is to please correct this terrible, terrible sentence to time served so that Ross can walk out of that cage. And he's proven he's not going to hurt anybody. He's proven that, and I mean, he hasn't been on the internet in almost, 7-8 years.
Hey, probably.
Oh yeah, he's got to go build another. He's gonna be stupid enough to build another. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, yeah.
It seems like to make that happen, if the president were to do that pardon type thing, it would be a representation of a greater social change because
I agree.
There's a lot happening beneath the surface when it comes to not only public perception on drug policy, but also the police state in general. And so both of those grievances would kind of be solved at once symbolically if Ross was freed. It would be a smart political move, I think, but it could be encouraged through public pressure. And so in terms of public pressure, we should talk about why we should end the drug war. And personally, I think Ross was smart about this before most people were. And in that sense, I think he was somewhat of a visionary because this idea wasn't as popular as it is now, but it's gaining a lot of traction throughout the culture, especially in America, but throughout the world. Places like Portugal have legalized all drugs. And
their society has improved tremendously. I've talked to people there.
Yeah. What have they said? What was their?
Said it was getting really sleazy and dangerous, and then they did this, and it's now wholesome and fine, and people are, which is kind of counterintuitive. You think that's not how it would work, but it has, and not only
and
there.
Our current strategy's not working.
No, in fact, no. It creates violence. You know, the cartels. I don't think they'd have the kind of money and power they have if it weren't for the drug war.
Oh, of course. It would end there. That's their primary source of revenue, yeah. Is the black market, yeah, and illegal exactly. drugs. If those are legal, I mean, I don't know how I feel about taxes, but the government would be making most of the money from drugs, which, you know, they're kind of their own gang, but at least it's not going to the mafia, right? Yeah. And, you know, it kind of starts with this problem of conscious freedom, I think, is the first thing here. Because if you don't have the option to control the contents of your own consciousness, of your own mind, what freedom do you really have if you can't expand your own mind and use any drug you want to as an adult individual? Like you said, it does seem a little counterintuitive, and sometimes it's hard to pitch. But when you point out the problems with the current drug war, it can be easier. Addiction rates are lowered. Deaths from drugs are lowered because you have safe usage facilities. You've got nurses there ready to help you out. You've got safe needle exchanges, so people aren't spreading dangerous diseases. So you have a lower spread of HIV and AIDS. I mean, no one's going to buy a unpure product. A lot of people have laced drugs because of the black market. That doesn't happen. I mean, the Silk Road solves that problem itself because of the reviews and the purity. Mm-hmm. It's much safer than buying anything off of the street where somebody might recognize you and then you can get harmed in a violent situation. So it's like the super safe way. It's like a model for building a future, kind of, instead of something that's supposed to be looked down upon. It's actually something that we might be able to use as a framework to build a better society.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of points. One is Neil Franklin, who's longtime law enforcement, is the head of LEAP, Law Enforcement Action Partnership, has worked on the streets in the drug war. And the reason he started this was because he saw the terrible devastation in the neighborhoods and with the drug war. And he said, we should not be treating addicts like criminals. They need help. And so there's that. But just to get back to the basics of the Constitution, there's no authority whatsoever in the Constitution for drugs to be illegal. Now, with alcohol, because they decided they wanted to make it illegal, they had to pass an amendment. And then when they realized it was a huge failure and that the mafia became just like the cartels and all of that, they had to pass another amendment to make it legal again. They have done nothing like that with the drug war. They just declared it, wrote themselves a memo, and just said, okay, we can throw people in cages for doing this. I'm not arguing one way or the other for drugs or using drugs. In fact, I think probably it'd be a good idea not to use a lot of drugs or maybe even any. And maybe don't drink alcohol either, you know, and smoke cigarettes and all that stuff. But that's a personal choice. It's like you say, if you don't have your own body, you don't have jurisdiction over your own body, I don't know how you can be free.
Yeah, it's a philosophical point, but it's also a public health point too, because it supports public health and it supports a genuine philosophical position that is based in fairness and freedom and individual rights, just like our country was supposedly founded on. Mm-hmm. So I agree with what you said. What was that guy's name who researches this?
Neil Franklin. He's a great guy. He's very supportive of Ross. Neil with two L's, Franklin, LEAP, LEAP. Is his organization. And, you know, it's made up of law enforcement people, prosecutors, different people who are like, no, this isn't right. This is wrong. What's going on here?
Yeah, right. It should be a healthcare issue, not a criminal justice issue, because it's the whole perspective that you have to punish criminals who use drugs to fix them. Mm-hmm. That's flawed from the start.
Well, we know it doesn't work. It's been going on for 45 years and billions of dollars, and people are still using drugs. It doesn't work.
That's a lot. And they're dying from it.
I mean, why don't we do something that works?
Yeah, they won't die from them as much. They'll even use them less.
Oh, yeah.
And Rob, that's why
that happened in Portugal.
Because he realized this, and he actually made it possible in the United States and in the whole world for people to be able to engage in this kind of safe market. So it's not even what he was doing was a crime. It was actually a genius visionary idea for modeling society in a safer and more effective way that's based in individual liberty and public health. I mean, there's not a compromise there. A lot of people think, oh, well, if you give up liberty, then you're sacrificing public health or something like that. That's not the case with drugs, and it makes everything a lot more smooth. And I think we could prove it. It's hard to pitch this to the whole country at once, right? Legalize all drugs now. But what you could do is do small scale experiments in freedom, like Denver. They just legalized psychedelics. We'll wait a little bit, see how that works. Another city should legalize drugs, maybe a few other ones, see how it works. Then, as we see its effectiveness in these small regions, we can scale up and then make it to where it's something that's national. And so if by the time, you know, all drugs might be legal or at least decriminalized, if at that point something like that happens, I mean, you kind of have to free Ross at that point, since he kind of thought of this idea a while ago. I mean, maybe we could pitch it like that.
Yeah, I'd like to get him out before that happens. But it wasn't, Ross did not go into that, like, it wasn't about drugs specifically. It was about a free market and that people have the right to choose. And drugs were obviously considered a choice. So if people had only bought raw milk on there, which was sold on Silk Road, because some states will not allow you to buy milk out of a cow that's not ultra pasteurized or whatever.
Right.
That would have been okay. It's like it was about the free market part. It happened to be, you know, obviously people are like, oh, it's anonymous and I can trade, you know, marijuana mainly. Great. You know, because in those days, marijuana was not legal very any places.
Basically anywhere.
Yeah. And of course, then there's the Bitcoin. And the Bitcoin, I think, is a big part of it. And a big part of why they went after him so hard. And because that was, you know, this new currency that was independent. And I think actually the drugs were not a big part of why they gave him such a horrible sentence. I think it was the Bitcoin and his philosophy, because the biggest drug seller on Silk Road got 10 years. He has the same offense level as Ross has. And they gave him 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. On our homepage, freeross.org, there's a chart that shows the different Silk Road people, you know, defendants and their sentences. And it's 10 years and less. There's no one with more than 10 years except Ross has double life, including the guy who was running Silk Road 2 after Silk Road was taken down, who the government said it was identical, only bigger, and sold more drugs. He did no jail time. He was arrested and suddenly, poof, disappeared. And then I read, I think it was in Vice, that he was getting out, he was getting exonerated for just paying 2 years back taxes. Now, if they're really worried about drug kingpins and stuff, equivalent, why is he out? They're not worried about it. I'm not sure how he did it, managed it, but, you know, that's not right. It's not right for one person. There it is. And it's Frank Benthal right there, co-owner of Silk Road 2. No sentence at all. None.
Yep, this is the chart you're talking about. So it's 10 years, biggest seller on Silk Road, 5 years, 3 years, 17 months.
Mm-hmm.
Released. Steve co-owner.
He was the biggest cocaine and heroin seller. The guy with 5 years, Jason Weld, I think, or I can't remember exactly his name. He got 3 years. It was reduced because the same corrupt agents, you know, that were involved, of course, it was involved in Silk Road. And that judge said, well, if there was corrupt agents involved, I'm going to cut your sentence in half. So it was taken into consideration that, well, this might be tainted. And so he gave him 3 years instead of six. Ross's judge refused to have the jury even know they existed. And so that's the difference.
Yeah, you can actually see in the chart. Wow, that is definitely not fair. That's quite the disparity. The co-owner got no time? How?
Of Silk Road 2. Of Silk Road 2. Not Silk Road. Gotcha. Silk Road 2.
No.
Oh, yeah. And the guy who created it apparently got 5 years or something in the UK. But no, it's so disproportionate, which is in violation of the Sentencing Reform Act that says that a similar crime gets a similar punishment. You don't get to punish one person in an extreme way and the other one not at all, essentially. Back taxes. I'm sorry, that doesn't quite cut it. I'm not saying I want the guy in jail. I don't.
Right.
But I don't want any nonviolent person in jail. Yeah, but let's be fair here. It's crazy. Yeah. It just shows how political it is.
It's just such a clear example of the disparities and injustices in the justice system. So
it does. Ross is not unique. Ross is not unique. There, people are being victimized all the time. And families are being destroyed. Children are being harmed very badly. Their families are breaking apart. And almost 3 million children have a parent in the system. And over 60% in the prison population is nonviolent. It's like, what are they doing in there? Okay, have them have house arrest something. I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely is.
They're not a threat.
You saw the autonomous zone that's in Washington that they declared a autonomous zone and the government can't come in, right? I think we should all declare ourselves an autonomous zone because we are each an autonomous zone. And then something like that's decentralized. So it'd be kind of hard to push back on. But the whole idea there is to spread a message that individual liberty should be something that's valued. And it seems like that was the main crime they were punishing him for, the philosophy and the crypto. Speaking about that, I wanted to ask you about the crypto. Do you think that they were scared that it might be an alternative form of currency that would threaten the United States? Or?
Oh, yeah, I do. No, I do. I think that, well, the NSA, it came out in Snowden papers. The Intercept published it a couple of years ago. The NSA was urgently tracking Bitcoin users right before Silk Road was taken down, a couple of months before. They were after it. They were very worried about it. They didn't like it one bit. Now, why would you unleash the full force of the NSA, which is an extremely powerful force, was supposed to be going after terrorists. And by the way, terrorists get a lesser sentence than Ross.
Yeah.
Going after Bitcoin users. And you know, that means the Silk Road. In those days, that's where everybody was using them, Bitcoins. So yeah, I think they were worried about it. I definitely do.
Yeah. Bitcoin?
I own some. I haven't done very well with it. I've been going back and forth. I personally do not own very much. In fact, I think right now I don't own any. I might own a little bit because I went to a Bitcoin ATM and got some. Yeah, I don't. Ross told me about it years ago before he was arrested.
And you should have bought it, right? If you're right now.
Well, I said, should I get some? And he goes, no, Mom, it's too volatile. I'm like, wow, that was very bad advice.
Yes, it was. I mean, it is volatile, but.
Yeah, but it was only like 50 cents, you know, so I buy it $100, you know, it's like, I'm like, ah, but it was very, very kind of foreign and weird. And I was like, yeah, I obviously wish I had, you know.
Right. I always buy it and the value goes down, then I sell it and it goes up and I'm like,
I know. I do have some. I got in an ATM and I have, and then I can't find another wallet. You know, it's like I'm terrible about stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I actually recommend our listeners and maybe you, if you have time, to look into this researcher. His name's Gwern, G-W-E-R-N, Gwern.
And I think I know him.
Oh, yeah. He does this amazing online research and his research is very solid, very methodological, very scientific, very statistics based. And he shows how online markets are safer than physical markets. They're anonymous, pure, increases product quality. So it actually shows the benefits of what Ross was working on for society at large. I mean, it's funny because everyone who thinks about this, I think they think Ross was in it for himself. They think he was trying to be, like you said, a selfish, tyrannical kingpin. Really, this was for others. That, like you said, it's philanthropic. This was a vision that was meant to help society at large. And
idealist, you know, he he didn't even own a car. Okay. He didn't, he was sharing a flat in San Francisco with three other people. It's like, he wasn't, you know, it wasn't all about money for him. You know, he doesn't care about it. He, you know, it's not, that's not what drives him. By the way, Gorn, I believe, is the same person. I've communicated with him directly because I was asking about some of the research. He knows a lot about the Silk Road case, a lot.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So he would, he was actually very nice helped me with some questions. But that was a long time ago. But yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was a lot. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Ross, I mean, it's not against money. I'm not against money, but no, that's not what he cared about.
Right. Well, all you have is your content, right? And its contents. That's everything that you pretty much are. And his whole idea tied in philosophies of freedom, libertarianism, conscious liberty, which I think is the most important one, market economics, cryptocurrencies, and review systems to create a safe online marketplace for free humans to experiment with the contents of their consciousness. I mean, if you just look
privately,
at it that you
privately,
can see,
there's a big part of that too.
Yeah, privately, right. You don't actually have to express who you are. So I feel like, do you have luck convincing people who are viewing things in like a twisted media narrative driven way? Once do you find that it's easy to get through to them, or do you think people are kind of brainwashed and it's hard to convince them of the facts once they've seen, you know, like fake news and that kind of thing on the case? What's your experience with that?
Well, we've put together, there's a lot of work, a work that's on our website. It's totally footnoted based on the public record of the case. And it's kind of hard to argue when you go into trial exhibits, you go into, well, evidence. So, and we've made a big case for the fact that these allegations that were never charged or proven about Ross being violent. When I see it on Twitter, we have a page on our site smeared with false allegations, and it's footnoted, and you can go back it. And I just keep putting it up there, you know, and I think it has helped. I really am a strong believer in, let's look at the facts. Let's look at the record. And I wish we had, and so I really encourage people, you can link to it on our homepage. It's a podcast or a video, or you can read it. And it's very detailed. And it reads like a crime novel. Start reading, it's about the investigation and all the stuff that was going on. It's pretty fascinating. And I basically keep coming back with the facts. It's like, just recently there's a billboard in Times Square, Free Ross billboard in Times Square.
Right.
A supporter just called me up and said, I want to do this. He paid for it, the whole thing. And it was written about, you know, this journalist who wrote about it said, well, this is terrible because the Silk Road was known for drugs, child exploitation, and human trafficking. And
those two don't sound accurate.
No, they're totally wrong. The government doesn't even say it. And yeah. I wrote her, and I also tweeted at her. And
nothing?
You know, and then just today, not that I know of, I need to go back and check, but I doubt it. She didn't answer me. And then just today, somebody posted that under Spike's thing. I'm like, and I answered, someone else answered, and it's like, and here's the evidence, and what are you, people seem to think they know, and they just say stuff.
Just because they've heard it through the gutter.
Yeah, and you can't, well, first of all, you can't believe the media. I don't believe the media about pretty much everything.
No.
But then these people just heard something, and they just spew it out there. And I'm like, listen, this is a man's life here. Don't start saying he did stuff he never did. Never, never did. And,
right.
You know, I can think drugs are bad, and that it's very admitted that it was on there. I can, you know, look, I hear you. But at the same time, does that deserve double life plus 40 years? That's the other question. That's an evil thing to do to someone.
Yeah, unless you've done the amount of research that Warren has done, you might not want to be commenting about a case you know very little about. That, to be fair, though, Warren has done more research than probably most living beings on every topic. So I guess that's not quite the fair assessment.
Read our thing. It's called Silk Road, the Real and Untold Story. You can click it right there on our homepage. Check
so
it out.
I wanted, I wanted to ask you about that. So do you think it would be a good idea to write that into a book and publish it for spreading information throughout the public? Or do you guys have any kind of documentary made?
Well, there have been documentaries made. The only one that I've been in, it was Alex Winter's Deep Web, and that is good. It's very good. Oh, no, there was another one, Bitcoin, Banking on Bitcoin, I think, and that was a very fair one. A lot of them are totally distorted, of course. A lot of them are more garbage, frankly. So, you know, and I've refused to be in some that are they were begging me to be in. I mean, and I'm glad I wasn't. But so there have been some made. There hasn't been any made based on that, you know, what's on our website. But that could be something in the future. It's a big project. Yeah. And there's people who I believe would be trustworthy to do it. But, you know, we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it would be interesting because a lot of people, when they are interested in this kind of topic, they want to delve deep into it because it's interesting. And having a content source available for them in the form of a long documentary or a book, I mean, you've already got a lot of great stuff on your website. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to think about how you could spread more public perception to make people more encouraged to sign the petition, donate to the campaign, email the president. I mean, even the guard wrote a letter to the president. I mean, if that doesn't tell you something.
And he knew Ross personally, that's why. But I mean, and that's why we put together that work, which is, again, you can read it, you can listen to the podcast, or you can, there is a little video, it's 2 hours long, but it's kind of consolidates, you can sit there and watch.
Wow, that's basically a documentary.
Basically, I mean, it's not a real professional, super duper professional, but it's pretty good. And it's got a very good narrator who volunteered again, another supporter who's a professional narrator who volunteered. And I mean, we do everything on a shoestring. We're a family fighting this monolith, you know, so we're always, you know, asking people to have for help. And so many people step forward because, you know, lawyers, very expensive. And so we put that together for that reason, but I understand it's, you know, but there is a video version that you
awesome.
Can hear them talking and see pictures of who's involved. And it's pretty eye-opening how they do these investigations and some of the background stuff. And yeah, it's pretty cool. You should watch it. You'd like it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. If I had to make a prediction, I would say based on the public turmoil on the police state in general, violations of civil liberty, and public perception on drug law, I think the chances of him getting freed in the near future are higher than they've ever been. And so I hope that that cascade continues to rise in terms of social perception. And I don't think anything can stop it at this point. I mean, we even have an autonomous zone. I'm officially declaring myself an autonomous zone soon. I'm not sure exactly when I'm going to do that, but that's going to be pretty fun. So,
well, we should all be autonomous. You know, we're individuals in this country. We're not big masses of people. We're individuals. I would like to say that, and I know Trump's come under a lot of criticism, but he has been someone who has cared about criminal justice reform. And he pushed through the First Step Act against the will of Mitch McConnell and other powerful people in the Senate. And and it made the difference for people I know. Now, it didn't go far enough because they couldn't, because it was being fought. But for example, the Third Strike Act, which is Bill Clinton's horrible, horrible law, that he even says, oh, I'm so sorry about it. Well, I'm like, do something about it then, start speaking out about it. Yeah. But people are in prison. Huh?
It's kind of a shallow thing to just say.
Oh, yeah, kind of. And people are dying in prison because with the Third Strike Law, your third offense, it's an automatic life sentence. So for instance, Ross knows someone in there in the last prison who his last offense was residue on a dollar bill. I could have residue on a dollar bill right now. You know, you get residue, but that was a third offense. And so he's got a life sentence. And there's a picture actually on our website of Ross that he organized in prison of him and these other nonviolent drug offenders. And that guy's in one of them. Sweet guy, I met him actually.
Isn't there traces of 90% of U.S. dollar bills?
Yeah, I mean it's just so wrong. It's so terrible. And I met his sister and everything. And That's just an example. Well, in the First Step Act, they wanted to address it because it's so wrong, but they didn't make it retroactive. So people now who have their third strike get 25 years automatically. But people who are already on their third strike from the past, they still have to do life. And I'm like, wait a second. That's like saying slavery's wrong. We're going to end it. But oh, so sorry, you're a slave still. So, too bad. You got to stay a slave. It doesn't really make sense.
Retroactively punished for a crime that wasn't illegal when you committed it or something like that? Like,
well, in this case, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the first part of what you said.
Well, it's like an amendment that says, let's say today I'm drinking an illegal drink, but it's not illegal yet, and tomorrow they make it illegal. Well, I can't be punished for drinking it today because it wasn't illegal today. It was illegal tomorrow.
Well, this is different because it's an automatic life sentence for something that now, if you did the same thing and it was your third strike, you'd get 25 years. But they won't make it retroactive. And we were at the prison and people were jumping for joy because, like, this one guy, he only had like 5 years left of his 25 years, but he had a life because of, and then he found out, they found out, oh, sorry, you don't count. It's not retroactive, which doesn't even make any sense. And so, it's so cruel. It's so horrible. And, that was not Trump. He was trying to get the whole thing through and they had to compromise to get anything through. It's terrible. But now they're working on a second phase. And he is very much in favor of this. He doesn't. And so I'm give the guy some credit, you know. And same with his clemency. He's released a lot of people.
Has he heard about Ross said anything? Have we gotten his attention?
I don't think Ross is particularly on his radar at the moment, but we're working on trying to get, like, for instance, the libertarian candidates. I mean, that could possibly get his attention.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. And you know, we're working on it for sure. If anyone has any political connections, please get in touch with me. I mean, it's, I do believe that, you know, he has said that he really is fulfilled. I like Alice Johnson, for example, who, by the way, also was smeared with murder for hire charges that weren't true. She's going out and doing, you know, good things. You know, she had a life sentence for a drug conspiracy and other people. So, you know, I think there's a chance. I think there's hope. And as Ross said to me, he goes, as long as there's life, there's hope. And he's alive. He's healthy. He's, you know, and this is just people in paperwork. This is just somebody signing a piece of paper. It's not like I'm trying to move a mountain over here. You know, it's right. Like it's a piece of paper and pen. And so I'm just hoping that that can happen. Yeah.
I find it very optimistic that he's remaining positive. That is truly inspiring considering his circumstances, but I think it helps. I think it helps. I mean, it can't hurt, right?
Absolutely. He is very inspiring for me. He wrote an essay called Five Keys to Inner Strength I Learned in 5 Years in Prison. And it's on Medium and it's also on our website. And it's things he learned personally to stay strong. And it's very good. It's really helped me. Like, one of them is forgiveness, you know, forgiving the judge, forgiving that, not being eaten up by bitterness, because this happens to people in there. And I can understand why. I have to struggle with it, you know, and he said, nope, we're not going to go there. We're not going to talk about these people. It doesn't matter. It's all part of the system. And there's no point using up it hurt. Who does it hurt when you're bitter? You, not the person you hate, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's just one of them. He's got five things, five keys. And, it's really good. And he just has that kind of attitude where, you know, he's going to make the most of his life, wherever it is. And he's writing some interesting things. Some of them I can't understand a word he's saying. I'm like, he goes, listen, Mom, I'll tell you about this cosmology, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, let me read it first. I start reading. I'm like,
wow, that's cool. Is there any way to contact him or anyone that's not family?
You can write him a letter.
You can? How could, if I wanted to write him a letter or someone listening, what would they have to do?
Go to the website and at the footer on the footer of every page, there's how to get in touch with me and Ross, but also there's a take action page, which has a lot of good suggestions. And hey, people might come up with other ones like a billboard in Times Square or whatever, but right. That's a very expensive one. But and then Ross's address is there. You can just write him a letter.
Great. That's very cool. The only political connection I have, you have as well, Vermin Supreme. I'm going to be him on Wednesday, and I want to bring up Ross and tell him what?
Hi for me.
Oh, sure. I see that you guys have met before. Let's see if we can pull this up here. So, yeah, you know Vermin. Tell, what is this?
Well, I mean, I've got his boot on my head.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I know, it's hilarious. We were at I was at Liberty Forum in New Hampshire with the Free State Project. Great people, wonderful people who stood by us from the beginning. Gave me really my first chance at public speaking about Ross. And and we were at an after party at the Quill, which is a local place. And there's Vermin. And someone said, oh, let's take a picture of you two. And we're like, I don't remember whose idea it was, but somehow his boot ended up on my head. So it's like, hey, all right, let's do this thing.
Wow. So,
yeah, he's funny. He's a good guy. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, I'm going to bring it up to him. We're going to talk about satire and politics. It's going to be on Wednesday at 6, so maybe 7. I don't know. Whenever Vermin's free is when we'll do it. He kind of runs on his own wavelength, but I'm excited to talk more about this then. But in terms of wrapping up our conversation today, I think this is a vision for the future, because not only should Ross be free, his work should serve as a foundation for looking forward into the future for freedom and liberation for all of humanity and all individuals, and ending our toxic relationship with the police state and truly acknowledging individual liberty. And I think even though there's a long gap in between when the Silk Road was made and everything happened with Ross and now, I think that things are going to start accelerating very quickly, especially because they have been very recently. And I'm excited to see what happens in the future. And I'm optimistic as he is. And I hope everyone else is too.
Yeah. Yep. Where there's life, there's hope. We keep going. And I think there's reason for hope. Absolutely.
Yeah, there is. So where can people find more information about Ross? And we've got this website here. Is this your main website for information?
Yeah, freeross.org is our hub. And on the home, you know, on that, you can click into the petition. You can click, so freeross.org is our hub. There's also social media. Ross has a Twitter page. I have a Twitter page. Other supporters have Twitter pages devoted to him. So those are on the website. And Facebook, there's a Facebook Free Ross community page, as well as my own personal page, but it's mostly on the Free Ross community page, as well as a Free Ross it's a specific Facebook group. It's an action page, and for people supporting Ross, that anyone can pretty much join who wants to help us. And then there's Instagram, Free Ross Ulbricht, and YouTube and different places. There's lots of information out there. The freeross.org is kind of where it all, you can find everything, our way to get to it.
Awesome. So everyone listening, make sure to sign the petition and donate to the campaign if you can.
Yeah, I was actually interviewed by somebody recently who had not signed the petition. I'm like, what do you mean you haven't signed the petition?
I think I've signed it 5 times.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, with different people, you know, I asked my friend to sign it, like, not technically me 5 times.
So, please share the petition. You know, that's really, we're over, over 320,000 people. That's significant. I can go to somebody, I can go to an influencer and go, look, this is behind us. And it's impressive. You know, no, it's not an automatic, but it's impressive.
Yeah, it's something to
start with. 500,000, and I think we can get there.
Oh, I think we're going to get there pretty soon, honestly. And I think the future is very optimistic, especially if we view it that way. It works like a self-fulfilling prophecy and creates the future that we want to see. So thank you for your time, Lynn. And I hope everyone is thinking about creative ideas to help. And hopefully we see some of that happening on Wednesday with Vermin.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
That'll be fun. Okay. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Yes. Thank you so much for your time. And anyone who wants to follow that more, thelucidtruth.com, we're going to be hosting some of Ross's information on there. And yes, spread the message. Just think of some witty ideas, because if we get enough people thinking real creatively, then we might have a solution sooner than we think. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lynn. She is truly a badass. She really inspired me to help her more with her fight to free her son. Maybe I can work something out when I return to campus in the fall. Can you imagine being Ross and having a mom who fights for you with such passion and fire? Truly an inspiration. If you haven't yet, be sure to sign the petition. Next up on The Lucid Truth is a guest who needs very little introduction, Vermin Supreme. Vermin ran for the Libertarian Party nomination in 2020 and got third place, and is a political satire master who wears a boot on his head promising a pony-based economy. You won't want to miss it. He becomes the first presidential candidate to release his dental records on the episode. You can find the Lucid Truth podcast on our website, thelucidtruth.com, the Lucid Truth YouTube page, or on a podcatcher such as Spotify or iTunes. You can support it by sharing it with your friends, donating on Patreon, or following us on your favorite platform. As always, thank you for listening, and I hope to see you for the next episode of The Lucid Truth.